Hello, lovers and friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Romantically Lit podcast featuring two undercover hopeless romantics who kiki as they review different Black romance novels from across the diaspora. In this episode, we have a special guest. This is Comfort Amore, who is going to generously provide us all the answers that we have regarding her lovely book, When Love Visits, which is a Black romance, Nigerian romance, holiday Christmas novel, all wrapped up in one. So yes, Comfort, thank you so much for taking your time to join us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I guess we can get started with some of the questions we have.
Okay, I guess I'll start. So when you were writing, was it your intention to write a book about fast love with minimal struggle between lovers? Or did it just kind of unfold?
Yeah, I'll say that the when we in romance of it all, that part actually just kind of unfolded. But yeah, the love with no struggle part was very much intentional. Yeah, so I think when I started writing the book, I just wanted to write a beautiful love story that would be two people coming together, knowing from the start that they really wanted to be with each other and working towards that, you know, as the story progressed and now ended up together. But I think when I began writing the story, because I originally wanted it to be like this really short novella, something of like 5,000 words, or just in soft copy version, I think that has kind of dictated the tempo of the book from the start. And when I realized that the book was growing out of my hands and it was turning into a full-length novel, it was just already too late to go back and change that tempo into something more slow-burn. And I thought that, you know, whirlwind romances do also need their representation, especially in African literature scene. So, yeah.
Okay. As you were writing the book, were there any songs, books, or other authors that you were sort of like visiting in order to help you like with the writing process of your characters or even like the plot?
Authors, not that I can think of. I read books very much for pleasure only. Yeah. I mean, there are times when I'm reading a book and I see a brilliantly written line or, you know, crafted sentence or paragraph, I'm like, yeah, this writer can, you know, this author can actually write. So I take some notes and all of that. And of course, there are authors that have inspired me when it comes to, you know, writing romance. I mean, the likes of Nora Roberts, Debbie Macomba, I've always wanted to just publish as many romance, beautiful romance novels as they do. But I wouldn't say that there was actually ever a point in time during the writing process when I thought of, oh, this one author would do this, so I want to do that as well. I don't think that happened. I think specifically because of the way I wanted to approach the romance nature of the book itself. You know, typically the way romance happened for some other books are mostly different. Small, you know, taking just time to form gradually over time, and then there are hiccups here and there, and of course there are some troubles that the characters have to deal with independently and then together and then overcome. So I didn't really think there was any author or book per se that I could look to give me an idea of how to make that unfold in my own book. But when it comes to songs, I do love songs a lot. So I would say, yeah, I was definitely listening to a lot of songs while I was writing. And if you notice, so many of the songs featured in the book. So I just felt like, yeah, this would make sense. Yeah.
A lot of Taylor Swift. We absolutely know this. We are not huge Taylor Swift fans, but we were like, oh my God, like, what, like, we want to see what you're seeing in the song.
Okay, I've been a Swiftie since I was like, I think 12 or
really?
13.
Wow.
So all my life really, and it just felt like, you know, it felt nice to add something of myself in the book. Yeah. Yeah,
speaking of adding something of yourself, how good did it feel to self-insert yourself as the therapist in the book?
I think that one was very tongue-in-cheek. Like, yeah, I knew the readers would pick that up. And I'm like, I wanted them to be like, ah, really? Comfort, really? So, yeah. It felt like I was doing something really naughty, but then at the same time, funny. I do say so myself.
Okay. So talking about your characters, let's start with Uju's character. When it comes to building her as who she is, she's a very ambitious person. She's very loving towards her friends, her family. She has a really good head on her shoulders. So as you were trying to develop her character, like what are the similarities between her, maybe yourself or someone that you know in terms of like sisterhood, which is a big theme in the book as well?
Okay. That I took a huge part of that from my sister, my female friendship groups, right? So I had this female friendship group when we were in university, and it was really tight knit. But over the years, we are all now living in different parts of the world, so it's like things are not as they used to be. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to convey the kind of female friendship that, despite the distance, they're still managing to find ways to, you know, really still be there for one another, still be present in each other's lives. So yeah, I would definitely say that. But most of the interactions within the friendship group, whenever I thought of how I could make it seem as natural as possible, I could make it seem like something that any typical girls group would discuss and how they would discuss it, I would just think, oh, if this were my friendship group, how are we going to discuss this? How are we going to talk about this? What would be everyone's reaction? So yeah, I would say for that part, I definitely lean into my experience, you know, with being in the friendship group. Then for Uju's character itself, I think I just really wanted to present a female character that was well-rounded, right? Self-assured, confident, thriving, successful, has amazing family or amazing support systems, you know, overall. Because one thing that really gives me the ick, especially when it comes to movies, dramas, or books, is when they make the female character into this damsel in distress that is clumsy, I can't seem to get anything right. Mm-hmm. I need someone to come and save her, and you know, sees herself as someone who is not worthy or deserving, and it has to go through the old trip. Like, no, why does it always have to be like that? Now, I don't have anything against, you know, female characters coming into their own as the story progresses. Absolutely love an amazing coming into your own kind of trope in books and movies and other entertainment forms. But I really wanted to do something different. I wanted to present the female character that was, you know, we're meeting her at a place where she had gone through the growing and maturing and self-doubting and imposter syndrome, and you know, mm-hmm. if that word exists. And she was just in a really good place where when love found her, it was a place where she was more able to receive its own attention because everything else in her life was just working. So yeah, I wanted to give the readers that kind of character, just someone really strong and self-confident and self-assured and really thriving. I think that was really important for me. I didn't want the old rich boy poor girl trope or rich boy struggling girl trope. I just wanted both of them to really be successful in their different fields. Yeah.
Okay. And I do have a follow-up question. So her friends, every single one of them is thriving.
Every single one.
Was it seven of them, I think, on the group chat?
Yeah.
But yeah. So that was definitely intentional for you. You wanted to show that, look at all these women working in different fields and look how well they're performing and they're respected and stuff. So I think that's okay.
Yeah, it was absolutely very intentional. I think the feminist part of me just wanted to see many badass women winning at different things in life, mm-hmm. right? And also I thought it would make sense, considering number one, their age group, you know, most of them are already in their early to mid-30s in the friendship group, even though we didn't really mention their age, you know, at least. So something I hope the readers will be able to infer when look at the fact that, okay, Uju is 32 and these people were in university together and then they've grown together through the years, right? So for most women, things begin to come together when you're in your 30s, then leading up to your 40s. So I just thought it really makes sense for the time of their life at that point in time. And I also thought it would make sense considering the fact that people in the same social class tend to move together a lot.
Yeah.
So we see Uju not just successful in her own right. She comes from a family that is equally, of high social standing. And then I just felt like it made sense for them to have found each other in university as people within that same social class. And even if not all of them were in the same social class when they began, because of how closely knit their friendship group is, and because of how they just tend to stand by one another and go all out for each other, it would have made sense for that success to have rubbed off on,
Across.
one another. Exactly. So even if there was someone at the start who wasn't so well to do and all of those things, together, they would have grown over the years. They would have really gingered each other to be more, focused, dedicated to their career, dedicated to making something out of themselves. So it will now make sense that, okay, in their 30s, most of them had something, or all of them had something solid going on for themselves. Yeah, that was basically what I had in mind.
Well, slightly going back to the book then, do you have a favorite part that you wrote and why?
Oh, my favorite part. It's really hard for me to choose a favorite part of the book. I think I'm just in love with so many different parts of the book, if I'm being quite honest. But if I had to choose, it's quite hard. But if I had to choose, I would say one part I really enjoyed writing was the night we drew into Tade's place, and then they had dinner, and then they danced, and then they kissed. I just felt like for a clean romance, and even though the whole thing was well within, they were using kissing at first sight or discussing, intimacy at first sight or the first few days into getting to know each other. So I felt like that was kind of like a mini climactic moment. Where everything just came together. Like, yeah, they're realizing that, okay, I really more than like this person. I want to do things with them. And it tickled me to write the progression of events for that evening leading up to the kiss. So yeah, I'd say because of the memory of writing attached to that scene, I would name it my favorite part of the book.
Okay, then I have a slight follow-up question. Is it intentional for you to be a clean romance writer? Is that something that you want to continue, or like was it just like first book, let's you for this specific one, for these characters, I think this is how it would go?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. Of course, I think that I would definitely lean more into spicy scenes as I grow as an author. Maybe I would never really do a full-on spicy scene, but something more progressive and then a cutting close kind of thing. I think mostly because of number one, I'm not a prude, but I just feel really shy writing intimacy scenes. It's something I, even when I was working as a ghostwriter, I used to struggle a lot with intimacy. But I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Yeah, so there's that. There's also the fact that because of my religious leanings, and because I want my book to be the kind of book that people from age 12 up can always read, because, old time romance, I do not want to really go too deep into exploring spicy scents. So there's definitely that as well. But yeah, for this book, I just didn't think it would make sense for people to have sex within 2 weeks of meeting each other. Yeah. And I also wanted to present a little more relatable elements to Uju, in the sense that she was, not a saint, not like she was celibate in the sense that she hadn't had sex before anything, but she was abstinent because number one, the whole abstinency thing just fit into her character as this person who knows what she wants and who is really, really disciplined, right? So she decided to stop having sex with random people months ago because it just wasn't giving her what she wanted. So I felt like that makes sense for her character overall. And also, when I'm talking about how I wanted to be relatable, most Christian girlies who grew up in Christian homes and all of there's always that struggle of, oh my God, yeah, I'm having too much sex. I need to, stop so that I can focus on my relationship with God. I want to better my relationship with God. So I just wanted people who are also going through that to be able to read that part and say, yeah, this makes sense. This feels like me too. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a little bit of like slow burn, because like even as they were getting to know each other, I'm just like, so it's coming eventually for sure, because you can feel it, you can feel the slight tension between them, so which is great. So I want to talk about the infamous Tade. So Tade, this male character is definitely one that I have not, I've never met in real life. I've never read the books.
He's like a Ken doll.
He's a Ken doll, his cake, whatever you want to call him, right?
And Kendall.
He's like the
So
eighth wonder of the world. Only
correct.
Comfort has met him.
Comfortable.
I think it's all that. Like
One of a kind. So when
maybe.
you're writing Tade's character, because he's flawless, to be honest. I tried to like, even when he was talking about some of his flaws, I'm just like, okay.
I was like, I don't believe it. Yeah, okay. All right.
So how was it your intention? How important was it for you to show this representation of a man that we have yet to see on this planet Earth? So yeah, like what was your thoughts around developing this character? Because I know there's been a lot of mixed reviews about like him being like, oh my God,
Unrealistic.
unrealistic, someone from somewhere else. But yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I think I would just like to start by saying I probably never admitted it anywhere, but anywhere else. But looking at his character right now and against the backdrop of all the books I've read since I released my book, I'm starting to think that maybe I did go a little over the top with trying to make that really green flag character.
Right.
Whereas I think I'm just going to try to make him a little more humanly, for my next couple of books. But yeah, I really, really, really wanted to create this awesome male lead because my goodness, I was tired. I was exhausted of toxic male leads. And even the ones that weren't so bad, there was still one huge character flaw that, the girl would have to hammer and show and try to convince him that this is worthy of you giving it your all and jump. I just didn't want that. I felt like for once, a female lead deserved a male lead that was decided on her from the start and knew that he would never play by her and just continue to show that through the length of the book. Right. So that was something that was really important for me when it came to developing Sadie's character. So honestly, I just kept asking myself, how good can he get? How good can a man get? Yeah. Okay. What does a man like this do to make his woman happy? Oh yeah, I can definitely do that. Yeah. I'm just going to add it to the plot points. So that was basically what I was doing with Taddy. I just really wanted a proper green flag character. And also because of his social and financial status, in the sense that typically when you see heirs or millionaires or yeah in books or in movies or in dramas. Oh, my network. Sorry about that. Yeah. So when you see them in movies and books or in dramas, there's just really something about them. It's that they are playboys. Oh my goodness. There was a time I was working as a ghostwriter and I had to like write 12 independent books in a Playboy series, and I was exhausted. Like, do they really all have to be playboys? Like, can't a guy be rich and still have a good head on his shoulders? So I didn't want that for Taddy. I didn't want it to follow the typical or Playboy trope. I wanted him to be a proper lover boy, and it was really important for me to present him as a proper lover boy again because, like, he had to have. He had to had no. I don't know. Sorry, my brain is not working so well right now.
So
But
good.
yeah, I needed him to have that history of just being that person, and not the kind of thing where oh, you've been misbehaving your whole life, and then you meet that one girl, and then you are suddenly acting right because she is the one. That's not a rhetoric I personally play into, because I don't think it makes sense to treat older people awfully, and then suddenly you are becoming this different, whole new person for the word. I just think that's ridiculous nonsense. So I didn't want that with Tade. I wanted a history of someone who has always been that guy. So when he begins to do some things that people, oh, this is ridiculous, or this is too much, or this is crazy, it would make sense because it would fit into his character profile for the kind of person that he is. So I really wanted that for Tade as well. And also I just wanted to see an African woman be loved right for once. Like, let's just be spoiling her from beginning to the middle to the end, back to
Right.
back, back to back. But yeah, I do see now that there are also other elements that I could have introduced to make his character maybe a little more complex and a little more interesting. Yes, it's awesome, it's amazing, and it's all of that. But I do think his character was just too one-dimensional, and that doesn't really provide for an interesting or that much of an interesting read, so to speak. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think Tade threw us off. I was like, wow. I was like, where? And to the point where even I, when I was reading with the I'm just like, something is wrong here. Like, it was so suspicious. I said, no. This one is going to hurt. Whatever he's up to, is it love bombing? What is going on? It's at a scale of
Yeah.
here.
And that's why I tried to like touch a little on that as well with the
Yeah.
conversation with Uju. Like, I wanted my readers to know that, yeah, I know that this seems a little too ridiculous, too good to be true. But there are people like that, they exist. And yeah, I do think that really kind-hearted, amazing lover boys do exist. Now, they might not have all the qualities that Tade has, and they might also have things that they still need to work through, maybe in counseling or therapy, as the case might be, trauma that's affected them in ways that they might not even realize. I or just character differences or behavioral differences that will make them stand out from Tade. But I do think that there are so many kind of amazing people at their core. Especially because I've been privileged to know some of these people. I've been privileged to have some of them as my clients. And also, I've been privileged to have close relationships with some of them in my personal life as well. So, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I was actually talking to another TikTok creator about this because she made a TikTok about your book, and she was essentially saying it's because all of us are very used to non-Tade characters in our lives. And I was like, I commented, I was like, you're probably right. Like, we're very used to struggle and strife. So perhaps that is why, because the whole time I was like, even when Tanya showed up, I was like, this is it. He's about to play her. This is the moment. And then he handled it so maturely, I was almost a little upset. I was like, okay, where's the problem? Like, where is the problem here?
So I think the old Tonya thing was a little like a number one, I wanted to provide some sort of tension, like get the readers feeling like, okay, and then gotcha, no, it's not going to go that way, it's not going to go that way. But yeah, and at the same time, I just wanted it to be like a way to fully close that chapter on the betrayal and heartbreak that he suffered with Tonya. And some people were like, yeah, I saw some reviews like, oh, everything happened within 2 weeks, his ex suddenly came back. Yes, I guess it, right? But this is someone that has been in rehab back to back. So it makes, and it's not as if Tade is ever really in the country except for the Christmas period. So it makes sense that when she's finally out of rehab and he gets into the country and she gets to hear about it, she would definitely want to connect with him at that point in time. And just like everything was happening at the same time. But with Toyin's scene, I just again wanted to do something different. It usually pisses me off when the ex comes back. And suddenly everything good that these two people had been building is, thrown upside down. Especially when this exism would really deal that person really wrongly. So with the old Tonya coming back and Tade ending it so well, I think I just wanted to show people that when you close a chapter in your life, it's good to keep that door closed, right? Especially when you've done the work to truly heal, it's then easier to keep that door closed. Now, Tadej could have handled that 100 different ways. He could have gotten angry, he could have had what is the word called now? Oh, It's that thing when you're trying to recover from an addiction. Yeah, you could have had a relapse and then just slip back into old patterns of wanting to be there for her and loving up on her. And then you could have gone into the old, oh, do I still want to? And yeah, oh, she seems like a changed person now. She's done the work. She has been through so much. And maybe, and all of that would just put a spike in his relationship with you. But I didn't want to do any of that. I wanted to do something completely different. I wanted to show Tadia so, yeah, the years he has spent in therapy, had actually counted for something, even though he was still to be hurt, even though he had not really forgiven her until that point in time. I wanted to show that when you've done the work to heal and when you're someone who's really interested in moving forward, you can actually shut that door and keep it closed, even while still extending grace to the other person and forgiving them for what the hurts they have caused to you. So that was really the significance of that old scene with Tonya, and for me, that part of the plot for me, that was just the significance, what it means to truly heal and move on from someone. And yeah, that's
Yeah,
it.
Tade is definitely better than me, because when he was describing to Drew like how she manipulated the situation, I said this is just this is unforgivable. It's just too much. But I do understand, like even her herself, like Tanya, she
Yeah, she was a victim.
exploited, you know what I mean, by
Yeah.
somebody else. And so it was just like this whole cycle where she was just stuck into something. So I understand, like eventually how he provided that grace because he has healed from it and moved on. So like how is your own personal experience with love and relationships informed you when it came to writing this romance? Did you is are some of these things something you've personally like experienced or seen? And so you're just like, I want to try and like knit some of that into the story as well.
Yeah, I would say that there was definitely a little of that, but I would say more from the angle of my experiences has generally shaped my view on love and relationships, in general. Yeah. So before I got involved with my husband and that we got married, I was in a ton of bad relationships. And I think the last one before I got involved with my husband was actually a very abusive relationship. It was everything. Like when you think about abuse, everything, but without the physical violence, but like everything else. And a part of me, she always believes that it was only because it was a long distance relationship that, it didn't like devolve into physical violence at some point, and that given time, it would have actually happened. So just going through bad to bad to bad to worse when it came to my love life, it really messed me up. And I had to do a lot of work to truly heal from all the pain and trauma and everything. Now, when I got involved with my husband, we had known for years before we actually got romantically involved and then got married shortly after. It was a real adjustment period for me because then I was meeting someone who was completely different in a good way, completely healthy. And I had to do a whole lot of unlearning even within the relationship and even after we got married. I think it took like until our 3rd year in marriage before I actually could say I had fully healed and unlearned from every negative, traumatic, effects from my past relationships, not in my behavior, but in the way I expect things to go. Like there were times when I would find myself preparing to be lashed out at for just doing particular things, like, oh, maybe saying, oh, I'm not in the mood right now, or oh, I'm tired, because those were things that I could not do in my former relationships, but this was not happening. And this was something that was just really supportive and kind. I was never cruel. And it took a while for me to realize that, yeah, I'm actually safe here. Like, this is actually a good place for me to thrive in. And it just showed me that love could be so much different from what we've come to consider to be the norm. Now, as someone who studied this in school, who has taken several courses, who is basically preparing to get a license in this field, I know all of these things in theory, but experiencing that in my personal life just basically grounded it for me. So I go on this mission to show so many people out there that I know that the streets right now are crazy. So many awful things are going on in so many relationships, and a lot of these things have been normalized, and it's just a circle of broken people, hurting other people, leaving more broken people, and it's just madness. And we also see that being, represented in our media a lot, in novels, in TV dramas, in soap operas, in movies. Most relationships have that dynamic, right? The unhealthy dynamic, the toxic dynamic, the abusive dynamic. And even when those dynamics are to point out that these things are wrong, they are still somehow unconsciously perpetuating the idea that these things are normal, even though they are wrong. So when people begin to experience it in their relationship, they think, oh yeah, it's a pretty normal thing to experience, it's a pretty normal thing to feel, but it's not. And some people have it so bad that they don't ever believe that there's anything different. Some people do genuinely do not believe that there's anything different. So when I began to build my brand, one of my core message was to show people that normal doesn't mean that popular doesn't mean normal, and common doesn't mean right, and that there is something different. There are many, many, many different scenarios. There are many people who are actually in healthy, happy, thriving relationships who do not have to feel at any point in time that they need to beg someone or show someone that they are deserving of love or they are worthy of it, who do not have to work hard to make someone look at them and say, oh, you've been through so much for me, you've suffered through so much for me, I think I can now finally begin to treat you just a little right. So, a major part of the work I do has been breaking that stereotype, just breaking that belief, challenging it, restructuring it, and showing people that you can have better because there is better out there, rare, but it does exist. So, for me, that was the main thing I wanted to do with When Love Visits, especially considering how the book all came about. So, it came about from this thread I'd written a year ago. In October last year, about all the things I wished would happen to people when love visited them again. And it was just all of these awesome, blissful wishes. And the thread received a lot of love on Twitter and on Instagram, but I noticed that most of the comments were people saying that they craved that kind of love, they desired it, but they did not believe that they could get it. So, the response to the thread really kept me up many days. I just kept thinking and thinking, and then that day at the sink washing the dishes, I was like, wow, this is actually a major problem. So what if I wrote a book to combat this problem? What if I wrote a book to, show people that a love like this actually exists, a love that you don't have to struggle for, a love that you don't have to fight for, a love that chooses you from the start and continues to choose you. I want people to see that this is possible. I want people to see that they can have this. So that was like just the whole major basis for me writing that book. It was the foundation on which I built everything else. So yeah, to answer your question, my experience affected my general worldview of life and the work I want to do as a person, the impact I want to make, and that in turn affected the way I decided to write the book in that regard. And with all the bits of me that I added to the book, bits of my life that I added to the book, yeah, like I mentioned with the friendship part. Also, I'm a natural enthusiast. I'm always on wigs, but that's because when I want to show up for the camera most times, but when I can, and my hair is always in prophetic hairstyle. I've had my hair in star locks for a long time. So I'm working into the locks look. But yeah, a lot of times I love wearing my natural hair, I love wearing, so that was something I also wanted to add, just that love for natural hair in the book. And then particularly with Tade, I saw the little snippet you posted on Instagram, and I replied to it about how, coming to think of it, my husband actually does have a lot of similarities with Tade. Now, that might not have been something that I started out to do, deliberately, but I do remember that at some point during the writing of the book, I would get stuck at some particular scenes, and then I'll be like, how would my husband handle this? And then, oh, okay, all right, okay, yeah, okay. But yeah, let's bring it to Tade now. knowing that this can happen in real life, how would Tade typically handle this? Because a major part of writing is just assuming all your characters, right? So you step into this character, you assume them, how would this character think? How would they act? How would they typically respond to this? How would they laugh? And so, yeah, in those ways, I would say definitely bits and pieces of my life just found their way into my love visits. Yeah.
Okay, wow. Yeah, thank you for providing all of that context around it. And to everyone listening, there is a Tade for you. As you can see, it's possible. And I do 100% agree because it goes back to what Odila said about like that TikTok. It's like a lot of us, we're seeing rubbish on the street, to be honest. And like it's back to back to back. Like, you're just like, me, like it just cannot be. How is someone better gonna come here and change my mind about stuff? But it, of course, it's possible because I'm pretty sure you're not the first person. Like, there are lots of people, even online, who say, like, I have gone through this and that, but like all of a sudden I had this adjustment period where there's someone who came, I'm just like, oh, they just like me just the way I am. Like, there was no, I don't need to do or say anything. They just like me as I am and they respect me as a person. So yeah, it's definitely possible. And Tade is definitely the benchmark. He should, this is how y'all should be behaving always. Be considerate,
Well,
respectful. And not just
yeah.
what I liked about Tade is that he was not just respectful toward romantically with Uju, like the way he treats
Yeah.
his sisters, the way he treats his mother, people around him, he just has like, you know,
B,
like
is it
his warm.
B&B? Yeah.
Yes. He just has, I don't know, he has a love for people, you know what I mean, across the board, which I do like. So yeah, he's a very well, you know, rounded person in that sense.
Yeah, I remember seeing, okay, was your the th thread you're talking about, was it like, did you start each sentence or people start each sentence with when love visits? And then they would, okay, so I saw it. I remember seeing it. I think I even saw it more recently, like it resurfaced.
I posted it
Somebody's trying
again.
to steal your idea though, so you should. There's a page.
You should go
Somebody's
find
trying
them.
to steal it.
Oh, trust, that happens a lot in this industry, a whole lot. At this point, I don't even bother anymore. Like, don't worry, just go ahead. Do it. I just know that you'll never really be able to do it like I do, except you're copying it word for word, and then that is copyright infringement. But yeah, there's a lot of theft going on in this field, honestly. And there's really no way to protect your work as a writer, especially when you share your pieces online. And even more so as an author, because of course there are so many illegal websites and all of those things. Yeah, I almost went mad when I first published my book in Nigeria because for like 2 weeks straight, the book went really viral, and I was waking up to news of people just messaging me about this person sharing the free copy of my book, and this Telegram group having the free copy of my book, and some wouldn't send me like comment sessions where maybe somebody made a post about my book and then the post went viral, and then there'll be people saying, oh, I have the free copy, DM me for it. DM. Oh my God, I went through a range of emotions. I was furious. At the same time, I didn't want to be hypocritical because I understood that a lot of people don't actually understand that what they're doing is wrong. And I used to be one of them. I mean, I didn't learn about copyright infringement until like 2 years ago. And then when I learned about it and the harm it really causes in our creatives, I decided to stop. Like, if I want to consume any form of art, I would pay rightfully for it, right? So I wanted to be angry, but I couldn't be too angry. But then I'm like, this is still my hard work and sweat. So, but at some point, I just like, ah, you know what? People who buy the book will still buy the book. I'll do what I can to protect the book. Involved my lawyers and all of those things, but yeah, we just at some point just have to make your peace with it and focus on what you can really control.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was your book or another Nigerian author's book, but we posted about it. Someone was like, can we get the PDF for this? And like, I was like, ma'am,
Always,
we can't give you.
even under my own posts, even under my own posts.
Oh my God, that is the
Something
audacity.
hilarious happened on TikTok. Someone messaged me, and person was like, oh, please, can you show me the free PDF of that book? I was like, you don't know that I'm the
I'm the
author,
person who wrote
right?
it.
Like, oh, I'm so sorry. So can you share it with me? See, the book is being sold for a reason. Anyway, it's always easy to know when someone read the illegal copy, so to speak, because we did do a final adjustment on the cover before we went ahead with full publishing in Nigeria, and even on Amazon. So now there's just a slight difference, but I can tell because I mean I'm the author. So when people post that cover and then they attack and say, "Oh my God, you know, this is the best book," and some people are like, "Oh, this book is awful." I'm just like, okay, I see you. I know what you did, but you know what? I've just learned to be okay with it. So yeah.
All is that all this is showing me is that we need more libraries where people can borrow the book and bring it back.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that it's even much more difficult in countries in Africa because, you know, the system just runs really differently over there. So a part of me also understands. And even though, yeah, I put a lot of work and money and everything into this, there are some people who reach out to me and they're like, "Oh, I can't really afford the book, but I would love to read it." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, I'm gonna send you a copy." So I think I can't do that for everybody, of course, because then I would be running at a huge loss. But when I can, I do, because I do understand. And also having that perspective that a lot of people really can afford it. There was this thread on Twitter about how people feel about, you know, copyright infringement when it came to books. And then it was really an eye-opener for me because everyone had different perspective. So people were like, "Oh, authors are putting their work and sweat into this. It's wrong." And I completely agree because I've not been on that end. I know just how much work and investment goes into putting a book out there, and honestly, every single cent counts because you need all that money to come back. But at the same time, people are like, "Oh, people really want to read, and literacy should not be so expensive. Literacy should not be a luxury." So if people feel like the only way they can access this book is through getting the free copies or illegal copies, as we call them, then you know, just go a little easier on them. I think just reading that thread, gaining this perspective just helped me also. I think that contributed to just how much I came to make some sort of peace with it and began approaching these conversations with a little more empathy and understanding as opposed to anger and indignation. So yeah.
Yeah, we always say bookstore first, library second. After that, we're not encouraging you to do anything. Try those options
I'm
first.
not either. I mean, as much as you can, please try to support authors, especially independent authors, because man, it's crazy out here. It's really, really crazy out there. So please, if you can, and don't distribute. I think that's really the worst part. That's just distributing it. I think that one really, really hurts. So yeah, definitely safe. But you know. Anyway.
So to pivot a little bit then, was there any feedback that you received from readers about the book that was surprising to you?
I wouldn't say surprising, so to speak. I would say shocking. And just that one that stood out to me. So this person was like, "Oh, the book read like a Twitter thread, like a badly written Twitter thread." And that one really stung because I write a lot of threads. I've probably written like over 100,000 threads since I got on Twitter. I write a lot of threads. And I know that at most, when I really focus on making a beautiful thread, maybe it's a really long thread, it takes me 2 hours at most to write and edit and, you know, proofread, and then the thread is ready. But that was not what happened with this book. I mean, it was days and nights and researching and editing and editing and editing and revising all over again. Months of work really went into this book, and it just felt like someone took all of those months and squeezed them into this really tiny garbage ball and just threw in a trash bin. So yeah, I'm like, wow. I mean, I can take, "Oh, the book is awful. Oh, it's too unrealistic. Oh, nothing really happened in this book. It has no plot." But a Twitter thread, really? Oh, I think that one really stung. Yeah, that's the only one I can think of.
That is, I don't think they read the book, to be honest. There's no way you can compare it. There's no way you can compare it. Absolutely no way. Okay, and so when it comes to like your writing process, do you have any rituals or any things that you do to like set up the mood so you can be in the headspace to write chapters and develop your characters?
Yeah, when I write, I only write. So I suffer from brain fog a lot. Mm-hmm. It's one of the symptoms of my health condition. So what that means is that my brain is always buzzing, and that makes it difficult for me to concentrate, which makes it difficult for me to write. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I found really helps over the years is writing immediately after I get up from sleep, like straight out of sleep. So I'd say that's one ritual that I continue to apply to until this day. I don't do that for my regular everyday writing, but when I'm writing a book, I'm only able to start writing immediately after I wake up from sleep. So what I do is I sleep, and then once I wake up, I go to my office, I sit by my system, and then I begin to write. Now, I also turn off my notifications because the littlest distraction can just ruin everything. It's as bad as someone just coming, walking up to me and saying, hey, there's something else, and I've lost that train of thoughts, and that entire paragraph is gone. I'll probably have to go and start reading from two chapters back to build momentum and everything. So I just try to make sure that I do away with every distraction. And that also means forgetting to eat a whole lot of times. I remember when I was, you know, on a marathon, just trying to finish writing this book because there was a deadline and everything. And it was just days, I think it was 3 weeks of waking up, going straight into my office, writing for hours at a stretch. And then when I feel my brain begin to numb because no sugar, no energy, I take a break, I eat, and I can't eat and go back to work. I eat, I check my notifications, I respond to them, I go and sleep. Sometimes just a short nap in the afternoon. I wake up before then I can get back to writing. So yeah, I'd say that's one writing ritual that's been with me over the years, and probably still going to keep being with me because the brain fogs are still very much there. So yeah.
Okay.
And if you were not writing romance, or if you could fuse romance with another genre, what would it be?
Oh, I would definitely say paranormal. I think I'm a sucker for superpowers and shifters. I eat them all up. And fantasy, definitely fantasy as well. But I don't know. I don't think, maybe I'm just a little scared. Maybe I'm just doubting myself, but I think it's really hard to make good fantasy. Mm. I think it's really hard to make good fantasy that makes sense, because you are building whole new words, yeah, and inventing languages and magic spells and powers, and you have to do a great job of capturing all of those with your writing and making your readers feel like they are seeing all of these things play out before your eyes. So I truly, truly respect authors who write fantasy, and I want to be able to do that someday, even though I'm scared that might not be something I might be very much good at. I think I'm definitely going to still try it. I also like mystery a lot. So I like mystery, the kind where something bad is happening and they're trying to catch the bad person. Yeah. I enjoy those. I don't consume much of them these days because I get nightmares. And I found that thrillers and likes trigger those nightmares. I just stay away from them.
Right.
But yeah, I do enjoy them very much when I can, when I feel like, okay, this is a level of mystery and suspense and, you know, thrill that I can take. Yeah, I like action too. So there was a time when I was really into Regency detective romance stories. Just trying to catch the bad guy, but it's not like a mystery thriller kind of thing, but like more like an action thriller kind of thing, like detectives and small town thieves or villains they're trying to catch. So yeah, I think those are genres I really enjoy, and I would definitely want to explore them. I also have a Regency romance in the works that I'll probably be most probably publishing in a pseudo name, because as a ghostwriter, I used to write a lot of Regency romances, so I just really fell in love with them. So I think I want to do that. I have some stories bubbling in my head I want to give life to. So yeah, those genres are definitely
why is pseudo name, though? I always wonder this.
I don't know. I think it would just make sense to separate because, of course, the rejection romance will actually be fantasy. That's the plan. So it just makes sense to separate different genres, with the friends' names, even though you have one author. So people like something that a lot of authors do, like Jenny and Kress and Nora Roberts. So J.D. Robb. So she has the in-depth series in J.D. Robb. And then she has her romance books and her fantasy books in Nora Roberts, written in Nora Roberts. I think there's another author, Amanda Quigg. So she has a rejected detective romance in Amanda Quigg, and then she has a paranormal fantasy romances in or under Jane Anne Kress. So just something authors do, and it helps to look when I'm picking this book with this name, even though it's from the same author, I know to expect this. So yeah.
Okay,
Yeah, I
interesting.
think that's what it is. Like every like genre you switch into, like you're switching a different hat. It maybe like opens up your mind into like a different interpretation.
Exactly. But yeah, I do think I'm writing romance for quite a while to come, but I definitely want to, like I said earlier, for When Love Visits, it was just supposed to be a novella, right? And then it grew. But for my subsequent releases, I definitely want to like really take my time to build the story and develop the characters and show us so many other plots and lots of character developments and just do this slow burn way. Maybe not so much slow burn all the time, but yeah, I look forward to giving my subsequent books more depth. I think what I, yeah, as a creative is creating my best work. I don't want anybody to ever say that was our best work, right? I'm so obsessed with improvements. I'm so obsessed with improving myself and just proving to people that if you like that, I can do better. And if you didn't like that, I can still do better, right? So feedback is something that I treasure a lot, which is why when people ask me, oh, have you been in with negative, criticism, I'm like, baby, I'm welcoming everything because I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes and I'm knowing that it's something I want to improve on. So going back to feedback that really stood out to me, didn't shock me, but stood out to me was when people were saying, oh, I wish the book had more depth. And yeah, of course, not every one of this is not that kind of book. I didn't want it to be that kind of book. I was very, very intentional about what I wanted One Love to be, and that was how I wrote it to be. But yeah, I definitely want to show that I'm an author that can go deeper with our themes and yeah, with our characters as well. So that's something I'm looking forward to doing with my subsequent books, even though those will be romance. I think for the next 3, 4 books, yeah, then we can start branching out.
Perfect. Are there any favorite authors that you're currently reading right now, or poets that are sort of helping you write your next works?
Oh, well, so a little confession. The only Nigerian author or African author, if I'm being quite honest, that I've actually read that actually read before writing my book was Chief Chimamanda Adichie, which was the only African author whose work I'd read before writing my book. And When Love Visits was also the first time I'll be writing Nigerian fiction. So all the other books I'd written as a ghostwriter or even, in my spare time, just writing manuscripts that I've been piling up for years, they've all been, abroad setting, all those kinds of things. So I think I didn't really know a lot about how to properly develop an African fiction. So when I started working on publishing When Love Visits, I started following a lot of book accounts, in the Nigerian scene. And then I started getting a lot of introduced to a lot of African literature. Especially, I think one of the reasons why I'd not really leaned into African literature was because, I'm sorry, but anything that makes me sad, I don't consume it. I don't do tragedy. I don't do trauma.
There's a lot of strategy.
Exactly, I stay away. So, and then I would always see people talk about how, African literature is trauma porn, it's trauma porn. So I think that just unconsciously kept me away. But when I began to follow more book accounts in the African scene, I started to see that it's not really all trauma porn. I mean, that really amazing books too. There are, romance, you know, supernatural. So I've started reading a lot of Nigerian and African books. So I ordered a ton from Amazon and I've been consuming them voraciously, reading for pleasure, but also to take notes and see how other authors are doing it so I can improve, you know, in my craft. So yeah, presently some of the authors I've been reading, I think Michael, the one who wrote Mechanics of Inegwa, I've been reading his books. I've definitely been reading more of Chimamanda. I think I finally got to finishing Purple Hibiscus, seeing
That
them
is
suffer so much.
trauma.
Yeah, exactly. Like
God.
I kept putting it away for years because of that very reason, but I finally dragged my feet through it. And then, yeah, Jane Igodaro, I'm definitely reading more of her books these days. I'm also read, I've also gotten a couple of books from Rosemary Okafor, as well as Adesua. Yeah, I've gotten a couple of books from Adesua. I've not gotten into them yet, but I hope to. Then there's this Sea Breeze. I bought a copy too. I haven't gotten into it. And of course, A Very Giddy Christmas. I think that's the title by Tomi. I've seen so much good reviews about it, and I just can't wait to get to it. And yes, Tima Bala. I absolutely, absolutely love Broken. And I think what's scaring me about Afsatsu Bebi is because they said there was a lot of suffering in Afsatsu Bebi. So I've not even been able to put on my big girl pants and get into it. But yeah, those are the authors that I've been leaning towards lately in the Nigerian literary scene. But generally, I found a new romance author last night and I fell absolutely in love with her. In fact, I've been finding new authors recently. So there's VK Dixon. She has this series she's working on. I read the first draft and it was amazing. I wanted more after that, but I have to wait because it's not even published yet. It's called book two or book three. And then last night I found another. I think her name is Sarah. I really believe that I stumbled on the gem. That was part of the reason I couldn't sleep. Well, it's told me I was kicking my ass, but then I just couldn't put the book down. So Sarah Chamberlain, yeah. The Slowest Burn is the name of the book. I thoroughly encourage to read. I love, 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 love how she did romance. So yeah, I'd say these are authors that I think I'm really, really, really digging these days.
Okay. And then I guess to lead in, what are your favorite romance tropes that you love to see?
Okay. I think I love a good friends to lovers. I also love annoyance to lovers. I don't call it enemies to lovers because most of people are not enemies. They are not enemies.
I love you.
They're
You're
just
right.
people that can't stand each other at first, but then they get to learn more about each other. And then, so yeah, I think when it's done really well, I think I do love it. So friends to lovers, I like love at first sight though as well. Although it's kind of tricky. Because sometimes, you know, it's like really, really, and I know that's some way that people felt about my book as well. Like, really, really 2 weeks, really. But yeah, I think that when it's done a little more delicately, it can be really beautiful. So I do enjoy that as well. If I'm being quite honest, I would say the question would be more, what tropes do I not enjoy? Because as long as it's romance, I'm eating it up, baby. Except it's bullies to lovers, please. Oh my God, I hate it. I detest. And then accidental pregnancy. So, oh my
Everybody
God,
hates this one. I don't get
no.
it.
And then the old rescuing the damsel in distress. I'm sorry, but I think Cinderella is overplayed. So let's just have more strong female characters. But it can be sweet, though. I mean, there are some that it's too soon for. I will not lie. I won't deny that. But yeah, I would say, yeah, tropes that really stand out to me, the whole struggle love, puts you through a lot of BS, and then you keep taking it and taking it and taking it. And when you finally realize that you're done taking it, you know, you have to move on, you just automatically, ooh, light bulb moment. It comes to your senses. Oh, I actually love this girl. I can't live without, and then he chases you down to the airport, and then he does this grand old confession, and then happily ever after. No, I'm sorry, no. So yeah, I'll say those are tropes that I do not like. So outside of those tropes, anything else that is romance, give it to me. I'm going to gobble it all up. I'm a romance girly. always and forever. So yeah.
Yeah, I like pretty much all the tropes I think you like, I like. The ones that you don't like, I think I also don't.
Okay, thanks.
The accidental pregnancy one, I don't like that at
I love an accidental pregnancy. I think it adds a little flair, you know? It switches it up.
It's careless. What? No, no,
You know, there are some I do enjoy, if I'm being quite honest, right? Maybe there was like already a foundation between the both of them, already some feelings, but then they were resisting, or for some reason, forbidden love, they couldn't be together. But then a pregnancy puts them together, and then they have to work through that. But the kind where it doesn't want the baby.
Oh, then no.
You know what I mean?
No.
Now what do we do?
And then he's now so mean and cruel to her, and then maybe 6 months she suffers a pregnancy scare, and then he suddenly realizes that, oh my God, I've actually fallen in love with this woman, and then he
Which is
begins to act
crazy.
right. So I just can't. I just can't. But yeah, I would say another trope I really love is all this contract marriage of inconvenience. I love them so much. So yeah, I like to see two people meeting, coming together for different circumstances, and then now finding their way to love, you know, as the story progresses. So yeah.
All right, I think we got like two more questions for you.
No
So
problem.
the first one is, since it's like the holiday season, were there any Christmas movies and songs that were, you know, that you like to listen to,
Or
you like to share
books.
with us, or books, or books?
Okay, so I think I've talked a little about the books I've been reading. I don't know. I've just not been digging any of the hard copies like of late. So what I do, I just go to my Apple Books or my Kindle, and then I browse, look through synopses, and then okay, yeah, this looks interesting. I start reading a sample, and if by the time I get to the end of the sample, I like it enough, I'm never going to buy it and keep reading. But if I don't, like, okay, let's move on to the next one. So that's just what it's been like for me this holiday period. Movies, yeah, I've been watching a lot of Christmas movies. I think I watched The Merry Gentlemen on Christmas Day on Netflix. I also watched That's Christmas. It's an animation. I think it was a really awesome, beautiful story. Then yesterday I watched this cartoon as well, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, part one and two, with my
Love
sister-in-law.
it.
Yeah, it really grew on me. Like, I was like, really, what's up on food? But then I ended up loving every bit of it. So yeah, there's that. So yeah, those are the movies I've been entertaining myself with this Christmas period. As for songs, I've really been into Ed Sheeran's, and I think Elton John's Christmas song. What's the name of the song? Oh my God. Anyway, I'm just going to hum it.
I don't know this song, but that's okay.
Merry Christmas, everyone. I think that's the
Okay.
title.
Okay.
I don't know. I just love the song. So it's that one Christmas song I've really been loving this product. I've been playing it a lot. I've even been using it for a lot of my posts on Instagram. So yeah, that's basically it. Okay.
Okay, and then last but not least, but if When Love Visits, if and when Love Visits gets adapted to a featured film, a TV series, whichever, who would you cast as Uju and Tade? Do you have any in mind?
Yeah, to be quite honest, for Tade while writing it, I was really blank. I just couldn't see anyone that I know of in the Nigerian entertainment scene playing Tade. But now I think I do have a couple of candidates. Somebody recommended Ayola Ayolola, I think that's his name. If you've seen TMC, the Men's Club is the one that plays. Oh my God, why am I forgetting that name? It's right there on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't. But anyway, yeah, it's in the Men's Club. He plays something. Oh no! Oh my God, I'm just going to check it out. Sorry, I do that a lot.
Oh,
No,
okay.
I can't.
He's in Skinny Girl in Transit. He plays Mide
It's
in Skinny Girl in
yeah.
Transit.
Yes, he's getting there in transit as well. Yeah, exactly. So people have been like, oh, he has the charisma to carry Tade. But for looks, I'd say I'm leaning towards Shams Garba. I think it fits more of, you know, Tade's look, you know, the physique, the dark skin, the lean build, the height, and all of those. I've not really seen him act, so I can't speak to the charisma at all. But yeah. For Uju, oh my God, I think I would definitely love to see Nancy play Uju, because when I was building Uju's character, I mean, I love Nancy, I adore her, not just as an actor, but as a person. So when I was building Uju's character, it was a picture that just kept playing in my mind, right? So I think I would love to see Nancy play Uju, but I'm definitely open to other actors that I feel might be more suited for the role. So yeah.
Okay, that's funny because I put Nancy as one of the twins in my.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do know who I want to play Zendaya though. I think I want Jemima Osunde. What is it, Osunde? Yeah, Jemima Osunde. I think I will have to play Zendaya. Yeah, so suggests a couple of people I have in my head.
Okay. All right. Oh, and I said Shafi Bello for Tade's mother. I had that before
Oh,
Christmas
yeah.
in Lagos came out. I just want to be clear, but then that solidified it.
Yes. I definitely think that she would definitely make a good Mrs. Tade Maxwell. But honestly, the picture I have in mind for, I said Mrs. Tade Maxwell, imagine Mrs. Caroline Maxwell. I think the picture I have in mind of Mrs. Caroline is a character that is more willowy when it comes to physique, like someone who is small, slender, right? And just looks really like she could pass for someone in her 40s. Not that Auntie Shafi doesn't look great as well. She does, but she has a lot of that mommy energy to her. Yeah, I want someone that play Mrs. Caroline to be someone that has both that mommy energy, but also a young girly still wanting to have fun with that girl's, energy as well. And I think the physique would play a huge part into that. Absolutely adore Auntie Shafi. And honestly, I would take her as Mrs. Caroline any day, anywhere. I mean, I've just seen that woman. She's gorgeous. She's stunning. Her accent is mind blowing. And she's great at her crafts. Like, she can act. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, all of these are building castles in the air with fingers crossed. But
Okay.
yeah, I would definitely love to see the book be adapted into a movie or a short series. I think that's one of my life's goals or dreams, to see one of something I write to become, flesh and blood on big screens or small screens, as the case might be.
Okay, perfect.
Perfect.
Okay, well, thank you, thank you, thank you for lending us your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been, this thing where when you begin to engage a particular creator, the algorithms begins to recommend, more of their content to you. So I'm not on Instagram much, even though it seems like it. I have staff that keep things running on there. But when I do come online, and then most times your content is like one of the first that pop up on my timeline, and whatever you guys are talking about, I listen and I just like, oh my God, I enjoy listening to these ladies. They sound fantastic, they sound hilarious, they sound humorous. Yeah, so I've definitely been enjoying your snippets online a lot. And keep up the good work. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you so much. And I just want to apologize once again for the delay.
That's
So sorry
totally
about
fine.
that. Yeah. Thank you
That's
for
no
having
problem.
me.
Thank you.
Thank you for being generous with your time. So, yes, guys, we're gonna post this hopefully early next week because I want everyone to listen to the lovely words you had to say about the book. Please follow us on Romantic Lit on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube.
Twitter.
Yeah, and also please follow Comfort on TikTok and YouTube as well.
And
Are you on
Twitter.
YouTube? On Twitter. Twitter.
Oh, I'm
IG.
on YouTube, but it's like in hibernation. I'm hoping to revive it next year. But yeah, my most active platforms right now are Twitter and Instagram, and
Okay.
then sometimes I remember to post on TikTok as well. So,
Okay. And that's Phoenix underscore black, right? On both.
For Instagram and TikTok is Phoenix underscore black.
Okay.
But then for Twitter, it's the underscore Phoenix Black. I probably should change that. I don't know why I've kept it that way for ages. But yeah, that's it. Thank you guys so much. Thank you again also for buying my book and reading it and giving me a review. I truly appreciate that.
For it. We have to support
Thank you.
it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, everyone. Bye.